Moncrief on News Talk.
Officially, they're being referred to as auxiliary habitable dwellings, but already they've attracted the moniker shed sits. Modular housing that can be sited in back gardens with little or none in the way of planning permission. So is this the big solution to the housing crisis? Lorcan Sir from TU Dublin has his doubts. Good afternoon, Lorcan.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
The government's decision, just so people are clear about what's being decided, is this anyone can stick up a modular home up to a certain size in their back garden and there are no strings?
Yeah, so the idea is that it would come under the heading of what's called exempted development. So development for which you don't need planning permission. And it can be for a modular unit up to 45 square metres to be used as housing in your back garden. Now, you must always leave at least 25 square metres of grass, garden, whatever you want to call it, at the back. So you couldn't 100% cover, you know, your back garden. There still needs to be a minimum of 25 square metres. But effectively, that's it. So they've kind of changed the rules, whereas previously you'd need planning permission for that. Now you don't. So we will have to see what the implications of that are going to be.
Yeah. So if, say, your neighbours objected to this, do they have a leg to stand on?
Not really, because it's exempted development. And this is going to be one of the issues, Sean, is, you know, particularly in urban areas. Now, I don't know about you, but I live in a house, you know, a terrace of houses where there's gardens that we can all see over each other's walls, you know. And it'll be interesting, this whole idea of access and people looking overlooking each other's gardens and all that kind of stuff. So, effectively, your neighbour could do that. And now the issue is, if they put in a €140,000 brand new modular home, you know, and it looks brilliant. Well, that's one thing, you know, and it'll be nicely clad and have decent windows and all that. But if the neighbour starts to kind of get a load of pallets together and some insulation that they found in the skip and start to make their own shanty town, which I suspect is going to happen in a lot of cases, well, then that'll be a different kettle of fish altogether.
Yeah. And so will there be regulation around sewage and insulation and ventilation and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, the government says that these will have to comply with building regulations, but building regulations also include things like fire and fire safety and disabled access, access for people maybe who would be in wheelchairs on that and how they can get in and out and manoeuvre around the building. So the government will say yes, but of course that depends on people notifying the local authority that they're building them in the first place. Like, the government isn't going to know who's building what around the place unless they're notified of it. And of course, it'll be interesting to see how many people will bother notifying their local authority that they are actually going to do this, because somebody might come down and inspect it, but also because, you know, there's an issue around tax there as well and revenue, maybe also being aware of who's building what where and you know, having a look to see how much tax has been paid or how much rent has been collected, you know.
Is there any requirement to inform the local authority if you're putting one up?
Well, we don't know just yet, but I mean, the government have said yes, that there will be. But like all these things, and we've seen the cases in you know, all the unauthorised development that has happened in the country. You know, we saw the big house in Meath being knocked down there not that long ago. You know, so the idea that they would inform the local authority, I mean, we don't have a great track record in that, Sean, over the years, people building apartments and swimming pools and entire houses of, you know, 5,500 square feet without bothering to get planning permission or inform the local authority. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, if people do that. And if they don't, of course, you could end up with a whole, like, do you remember the shanty towns in South Africa in the 1980s? You know, you could end up with a whole series of back gardens full of, you know, basically kind of potentially fire traps, but also, you know, jerry-built units or, you know, even modular homes. But think about that then. Also, Sean, you know, a lot of people will have cars and they'll bring extra vehicles and I can see parking because I know where I live, you know, there's a lot of cars parked around the place. And if we saw an extra, you know, 10 or 20 cars on the street, I could see the potential for mayhem on the street on a regular basis with cars being thrown up on footpaths and everywhere willy-nilly, you know. So these things, when you're bringing in a whole load of extra people into an area, you know, potentially they have all sorts of implications, you know.
Yeah. Now, these kind of proposals have been put in force in other countries. What has the experience been there?
Well, in my experience, it's I have seen it mostly in Central and Eastern Europe, and it has been exactly as described. You know, it has been the shanty town and, you know, the person who owns the house cobbling together basically some sort of a prefab, and typically going out on Airbnb or some sort of, you know, short-term letting platform for people, and they meet them down the train station and bring them bring them to their home and you're in the back garden, you know. But it has, you know, it's effectively a black market. Like there's been no, you know, when you look at countries like in Central Europe and there's 96% home ownership, you suspect that says, well, there's no rental market. There is a huge rental market in those countries, but it's all cash and all under the counter. So nobody knows what's going on in the sector. And just related to that, Sean, the thing that kind of has escaped people's attention really is the idea that anybody living in one of these will be a licensee. So a licensee is like what you are when you go to visit a hotel or a B&B. You know, you're there under license. And you know yourself in a hotel, the cleaning staff can knock on the door and come into your room when you're not there, so can the hotel manager. And they're the rights that, you know, they have when you're just there under license and not a tenant. So, you know, the owner of the house will be able to enter these modular homes as and when they want. And I don't know, you know, that's a very unwelcome kind of prospect. And also you have no, you know, you have no rights, the security of tenure. You can be told to go the following day and off you'd have to go, you know.
Okay, why is that? Why couldn't, if someone puts up a modular home in the back garden and register it with the Residential Tenancies Board and go the traditional route?
Because I think the line that the government used when they were brought in this was to remove bureaucracy and red tape. And they obviously see the Residential Tenancies Board as bureaucracy and red tape. You know, you have to register, you have to pay a fee. The person staying in the modular home would then get legal rights to stay there for at least 6 years. If there was a dispute, they'd be able to go to the RTB and you wouldn't be able to turf them out as and when you wanted. And the government obviously see this as a bit of a problem. So, you know, in the usual kind of free market pro-deregulation ethos, we'll say, well, if we make them licensees, there's no real regulations or law around this, so more people might be inclined to, you know, develop these modular units and rent them out to people. And you get 14 grand a year tax-free if you do it in the rent-a-room scheme, you know, so it's not to be sniffed at.
Yeah. Now, people who are in favour of this idea are claiming could deliver up to 350,000 small homes. Does that sound credible to you?
No, totally not. And when you look at the research that they've done, the research doesn't stack up to anything like that. They took a very, very small sample and extrapolated it nationally. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, you have to think there's kind of you need two things right here, Sean, right, to do one of these things. You need a garden for a start, right? And you need a garden big enough to take 45 square metres and also leave 25 square metres free. And also, I mean, if you're to do it properly, you need 120,000 or more sitting there in your bank account to do this. And if you have 120 grand sitting in your bank account, are you really the type of person who kind of needs the hassle of having somebody living in your back garden and going in and out the side passage or through your house or whatever it is? Probably not. So I'd be curious to see how many of these actually pop up that are kind of legitimate, you know, quality ones rather than substandard jerry-built ones. I really don't think it's going to be a solution, and I don't think it's going to offer a huge number of units for people to live in.
Yeah, so it's kind of a partially, well, not partially, it is a piecemeal approach to the main problem. And is the main problem really that actual building work keeps getting held up?
You're right in that this is just tinkering around the edges, right? I don't know why they're wasting Dáil time and ministers' time kind of talking about this kind of stuff. The real issue, Sean, is a bottom-up one. In terms of like what we really need is a huge amount more housing for social housing and affordable housing, you know, for people on the low to middle income bracket. Now, the social housing, about 80% of the social housing that we deliver every year comes from the market. In other words, they go out and they buy it when it's built or when it's about to be built and they'll fund it. And instead of that, councils need to be building an awful lot more houses themselves, and then take people out of the rental sector who should be in social housing, take the pressure off that sector, and let the private sector deliver housing for sale. I mean, a lot of the emphasis in tax policy and planning is about delivering apartments. Like in the Dublin city area for the last 4 or 5 years, 95-96% of all new housing has been apartments, and 98% of that has been for rent. People don't want that. You know, young people want houses that they can buy, raise a family in, and that are affordable. And the government have kind of taken a top-down approach, creating luxury apartments for rent at 3 grand a month, rather than, you know, houses for 250 grand or 300 grand for ordinary people on ordinary wages to go and raise a family in.
Yeah. But will the private sector, or is the private sector able or prepared to provide those sorts of homes?
I mean, the private sector will move in any direction you point it in if if the incentives are correct. If the incentive is there, you know, in terms of will they make enough profit, can they do it, they will do whatever makes money for them. And right now, for the last while, like, the state has been promoting the idea of apartments for rent. The institutional investors have gone, so now the state has stepped in as the purchaser of first resort and buying up all the apartments that you see being built around the country. So if the tax rules were changed and if planning was tweaked slightly, you would find a lot more, we could provide a lot more medium density housing that would be cheaper to build and more affordable for people to buy. So, like, the private sector will respond to whatever kind of policy and financial incentives are put in front of it, you know?
Yeah. Is the private sector enough? If, say, all those tweaks are put in place and to make it profitable and advantageous to them to build the houses we actually need, would that be enough to solve the problem or to even make a dent in the problem?
Well, I mean, it has to be, because what else do you do, if you know what I mean?
If the state started building directly, if we, you know, had some sort of housing agency.
Well, we do have a housing agency, actually, but building directly is like, you know, people kind of forget that, or they think that when councils built housing, say in the 20s and 30s and the Merinos and the Cabras and the 1950s and 60s and all that kind of stuff, people think that it was council workers out there, but actually it wasn't. Like, where I live in North Dublin was built by Cramptons, who are a really old kind of company, a traditional house builder. So councils always went out and just subcontracted, you know, the work to normal builders. You know, Merino was built by a crowd called Kenny's, you know, and so they've always kind of gone out there and used the private sector to deliver housing for them. It's just been made incredibly complicated and incredibly difficult for councils to do that over the last 15 or 20 years. So, you know, the bottom line is the government keeps getting in its own way, Sean, really. Mm. And it could make things an awful lot easier if it took its attention away from, you know, always being worried about the market to actually doing things itself.
Lorcan Sir is Senior Lecturer in Housing at TU Dublin. Lorcan, thanks very much.
Thanks, Sean.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.